Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in today. I'll be your host, Juanita Watson, and I have brought to the program a very interesting author, Israel Del Rio. Israel was born in Mexico City. He is a technology executive with a long career in information systems. He was recently recognized by Computer World magazine as one of their premier 100 IT honorees for 2007. In addition to his day job, Israel enjoys composing music and playing the bass and the guitar, as well as writing. Honeycomb, which he is here to talk about today, is his third novel. His first novel, according to him, was thankfully unpublished and was based on the events of the 1985 Mexico City earthquake. In his second novel, Seeds of Power, Israel presented a political thriller based on a fictional Latin American country. Israel has been working on Honeycomb for almost a decade, and he's currently working on a nonfiction book about his personal experiences as a software technologist. He recently moved from New York to Atlanta and lives there with his wife, Rita, and his sons, Derek and Alex. Israel's daughter, which is very interesting to note, Tanya, she's happily married, lives in California, where she pens the Sabrina Teenage Witch comic series. So I am just so happy to have Israel on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Israel.
Thank you, Juanita. Nice to be here.
Yeah, so it sounds like writing is running in your family with your daughter carrying on the whole writing.
Yeah, it's more or less like genetics working backwards.
Yeah.
She started with the work on Sabrina, and I'm trying to catch up with her.
Oh, really? Is that how it is?
Yeah.
So, Honeycomb, let's talk about this. It was 10 years in the making. You obviously have a very deep connection with this story. What is it about this novel that has kept you motivated for almost a decade?
Basically, the novel's inception came from a couple of memories of mine that came sometime in the past. I cannot even pinpoint exactly when I got those two memories. I got many more memories, but those two particular memories were very significant to me.
Mm-hmm.
One of them related to me being in a state of being unborn, being before my birth, and being given a choice to live my life. I was being presented with a number of possibilities on what life to live based on something I had done in my previous life. And my own memory is just very fuzzy, it's not very clear, but I remember choosing, obviously, the life I chose, which is the one I'm living.
Mm.
The second memory is another one where I was presented with a description of what my previous life had been like in a very much of a multimedia type of a form.
Mm.
So I put those two things together, and that kind of gave me the idea for writing a novel that kind of explores those issues or those points in terms of the perspective of somebody who is about to be born and is given a choice of living multiple lives, and what would be the criteria for that person to follow in terms of that choice.
Mm, it's a really interesting concept. So why did you feel so strongly that you wanted to get this novel with this message out there, that you would stick with it and unto completion after 10 years?
Obviously, my perspective is the desire to express a viewpoint I have about the importance to keep a balance between what we do every day in our lives, which is the reality of work and the grind of a normal day-to-day relationship, with the understanding that there is a spiritual angle that we all should keep in mind is there. Myself, coming from a technology background or a scientific background, I always try to answer questions which we all confront on a day-by-day basis on a scientific manner. And for me to kind of understand that there's a spiritual aspect as well to life and trying to see how that can be explained from a scientific perspective was something that I struggled with for many years. And I wanted to kind of convey kind of my answer to that question through the medium of the novel.
Mm-hmm. So what was your original like when you were a child, did you grow up in a religious family? Was it more spiritual? What kind of background did you have regarding past lives, reincarnation, that kind of thing?
Actually, no, I did not have a very religious background as a child. My family was pretty much a single mother family. She was kind of raising all, myself and my brothers and sisters. So she did not have a lot of time to really kind of keep an eye on us kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically were on our own for most of the childhood, which was good because it kind of gave me, I think, a very independent perspective on things. My religious upbringing from childhood is Catholic, but I never really practiced religion.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a catechism class once when I was like 6 or 7 years old, and I asked the priest a question about the Trinity and how that could be three entities in one. And I was not very happy even then with the answer I got from the priest, who I found out was very dismissive, and he didn't want to actually answer the question. So I was disappointed about that, and since then I did not practice any religion at all. So I'm not really kind of trying to bash religion or anything. I'm sure it's very important for many people, but for me, I try to find more the answers around science and trying to find more about what the world is all about from a scientific perspective.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yes, for me, the honeycomb as a novel is a return to spirituality. I came around the full circle from the scientific perspective and also being able to kind of understand what science has to tell us about mysteries of the universe, basically, and how could we make those mysteries compatible with the aspects of spirituality.
Well, we are living in such an interesting time right now with the whole field of quantum physics just exploding. So in how then are we able, or are you still trying to wrap your mind around how we can actually explain reincarnation in the context of science and quantum physics?
Yeah, obviously there is so much that we don't know about how the universe actually works from a scientific perspective. A few years ago, I was having a conversation with some friends, and one of them was very pro-scientist, basically saying that, science has explained everything. We know everything about the laws of motions and about physics and about this and that. But I really think that what science knows about the universe is really very, very small compared to what is out there. And I think many physicists, many scientists are coming to that realization as well. If you just look at the recent discoveries in science about the dark matter and dark energy,
mm-hmm.
and you think about the fact that now we know from a scientific perspective that of all of the universe that we know about, all the stars, the billions of stars, the billions of galaxies that they are there, all of the light and matter in the universe is only 10% of what the universe is all about, and that nobody knows yet what the other 90% is all about, what's there in terms of, it's not matter, it's not normal matter, it's something else, they don't know what it is.
How did they measure that?
Well, basically, there are two aspects. I mean, they know that there is dark matter because of the fact that the galaxies exist the way they do.
Mm-hmm.
They are spinning, the stars are spinning along with the galaxies. If there was no dark matter, the stars will not stay within the galaxies. They will tend to fly away from the galaxy. So they know, they figure that there has to be like a 10% more of what they call dark matter there, but nobody knows what it is, keeping the galaxies together. And then on top of that, they recently discovered that the universe is actually expanding a lot faster than in the past. Instead of being slowing down, everybody agrees there was a big bang at the beginning, right, mm-hmm. from a scientist's perspective. And the idea was that if there was a big bang in the beginning, the universe should be slowing down in time.
Mm.
That's the logic. And the thinking was, well, if we figure out how rapidly how the universe is slowing down, we can predict or compute how long ago the universe was formed. But when they observed the stars and galaxies, actually the galaxies in the far distant horizon of the universe, they discover that they're actually accelerating, that they are moving faster every time. So the explanation for that is that there is a dark energy that is actually making the universe move faster with time. So there is an understanding that based on formulas and mathematics that about 90% of the universe is not the matter that we know all about. It's something else.
Isn't that fascinating? What do you think it is, Israel?
Well, I think I think the scientists are trying to answer those questions, but there are different theories. Obviously, one of them is that certainly dark matter is something that may be a particle that does not interact normally with anything else that we know about, but except from a gravitational perspective. So those particles have a way to interact with a reality, but that interaction is a very, very subtle one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very strong one. So if you think about that, I mean, if you realize that around us at any given time there is a significant matter, amount of matter that we don't see, we don't sense, we don't touch normally, but somehow interacts with us, and connect that with many things that have happened from a metaphysical perspective, right? The idea of spirits, the idea of ghosts, the idea of entities in the spiritual realm. You can see that there is room, even in science, for a hypothesis that says, you know, that matter, those entities, those spirits can exist in that matter. Maybe there's an entity that exists in that form and interacts in a very weak way with reality, but it still manifests itself somehow.
Mm-hmm. And so this is where we can look, I guess, at consciousness, and does consciousness exist in that matter?
As well. And it goes back, the question of consciousness goes back more from my perspective to the understanding of quantum physics and the aspects of when reality becomes real, so to speak.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Quantum physics tells us that reality becomes real when it is observed, when there is an observation.
Yes.
That collapses the wave function for a probability in state, from a possible outcome. And when you start thinking about quantum physics and the fact that we are also made of, obviously, of atoms and electrons and matter, that we are also observers, then we can start thinking in terms of interaction between ourselves and that realm that we don't know about. So that becomes a little bit more of an interaction that can explain what we can do as people, or what we are in terms of people in a different realm. So just for instance, my belief is that the spirit of who we really are exists independently of our bodies, and that we come into this realm as we are born. When we are born, we enter the material realm, and then we interact with reality. Our memories, what we experience, what we live, are actually memories that are written not only in our brain, but in the cosmic background. They are never lost. They never disappear. So even if after our passing or both.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in today. I'll be your host, Juanita Watson, and I have brought to the program a very interesting author, Israel Del Rio. Israel was born in Mexico City. He is a technology executive with a long career in information systems. He was recently recognized by Computer World magazine as one of their premier 100 IT honorees for 2007. In addition to his day job, Israel enjoys composing music and playing the bass and the guitar, as well as writing. Honeycomb, which he is here to talk about today, is his third novel. His first novel, according to him, was thankfully unpublished and was based on the events of the 1985 Mexico City earthquake. In his second novel, Seeds of Power, Israel presented a political thriller based on a fictional Latin American country. Israel has been working on Honeycomb for almost a decade, and he's currently working on a nonfiction book about his personal experiences as a software technologist. He recently moved from New York to Atlanta and lives there with his wife, Rita, and his sons, Derek and Alex. Israel's daughter, which is very interesting to note. Tanya lives, she's happily married, lives in California, where she pens the Sabrina Teenage Witch comic series. So I am just so happy to have Israel on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Israel.
Thank you, Juanita. Nice to be here.
Yeah, so it sounds like writing is running in your family with your daughter carrying on the whole writing.
Yeah, it's more or less like genetics working backwards.
Yeah.
She started with the work on Sabrina, and I'm trying to catch up with her.
Oh, really? Is that how it is?
Yeah.
So, Honeycomb, let's talk about this. It was 10 years in the making. You obviously have a very deep connection with this story. What is it about this novel that has kept you motivated for almost a decade?
Basically, the novel's inception came from a couple of memories of mine that came sometime in the past. I cannot even pinpoint exactly when I got those two memories. I got many more memories, but those two particular memories were very significant to me.
Mm-hmm.
One of them related to me being in a state of being unborn, being before my birth, and being given a choice to live my life. I was being presented with a number of possibilities on what life to live based on something I had done in my previous life. And my own memory is just very fuzzy. It's not very clear, but I remember choosing, obviously, the life I chose, which is the one I'm living.
Yeah.
The second memory is another one where I was presented with a description of what my previous life had been like in a very much of a multimedia type of a form.
Ah.
So I put those two things together, and that kind of gave me the idea for writing a novel that kind of explores those issues or those points in terms of the perspective of somebody who is about to be born and is given a choice of living multiple lives, and what would be the criteria for that person to follow in terms of a choice.
It's a really interesting concept. So why did you feel so strongly that you wanted to get this novel with this message out there, that you would stick with it and onto completion after 10 years?
Obviously, my perspective is the desire to express a viewpoint I have about the importance to keep a balance between what we do every day in our lives, which is the reality of work and the grind of a normal day-to-day relationship, with the understanding that there is a spiritual angle that we all should keep in mind, is there. Myself, coming from a technology background or a scientific background, I always try to answer questions which we all confront on a day-by-day basis on a scientific manner. And for me to kind of understand that there's a spiritual aspect as well to life and trying to see how that can be explained from a scientific perspective was something that I struggled with for many years. And I wanted to kind of convey kind of my answer to that question through the medium of the novel.
So what was your original, like when you were a child, did you grow up in a religious family? Was it more spiritual? What kind of background did you have regarding past lives, reincarnation, that kind of thing?
Actually, no, I did not have a very religious background as a child. My family was pretty much a single mother family. She was kind of raising myself and my brothers and sisters. So she did not have a lot of time to really kind of keep an eye on us kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically were on our own for most of the childhood, which was good because it kind of gave me, I think, a very independent perspective on things. My religious upbringing from childhood is Catholic, but I never really practiced religion.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a catechism class once when I was like 6, 7, or 7 years old, and I asked the priest a question about the Trinity and how that could be three entities in one. And I was not very happy even then with the answer I got from the priest, who I found out was very dismissive, and he didn't want to actually answer the question. So I was disappointed about that, and since then I did not practice any religion at all. So I'm not really kind of trying to bash religion or anything. I'm sure it's very important for many people, but for me, I try to find more the answers around science. I'm trying to find more about what the war is all about from a scientific perspective.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yes, for me, the honeycomb as a novel is a return to spirituality. I came around a full circle from the scientific perspective and also being able to kind of understand what science has to tell us about mysteries of the universe, basically, and how could we make those mysteries compatible with the aspects of spirituality.
Well, we are living in such an interesting time right now with the whole field of quantum physics just exploding. So in how then are we able, or are you still trying to wrap your mind around how we can actually explain reincarnation in the context of science and quantum physics?
Yeah, obviously there is so much that we don't know about how the universe actually works from a scientific perspective. A few years ago, I was having a conversation with some friends, and one of them was very pro-scientist, basically saying that, science has explained everything. We know everything about the laws of motions and about physics and about this and that. But I really think that what science knows about the universe is really very, very small compared to what is out there. And I think many physicists, many scientists are coming to that realization as well. If you just look at the recent discoveries in science about the dark matter and dark energy,
mm-hmm.
and you think about the fact that now we know from a scientific perspective that of all of the universe that we know about, all the stars, the billions of stars, the billions of galaxies that they are there, all of the light and matter in the universe is only 10% of what the universe is all about, and that nobody knows yet what the other 90% is all about, what's there in terms of, it's not matter, it's not normal matter, it's something else, they don't know what it is.
How did they measure that?
Well, basically, there are two aspects. I mean, they know that there is dark matter because of the fact that the galaxies exist the way they do.
Mm-hmm.
They are spinning, the stars are spinning along with the galaxies. If there was no dark matter, the stars will not stay within the galaxies. They will tend to fly away from the galaxies. So they know, they figure that there has to be like a 10% more of what they call dark matter there, that nobody knows what it is, keeping the galaxies together. And then on top of that, they recently discovered that the universe is actually expanding a lot faster than in the past. Instead of being slowing down, everybody agrees there was a big bang at the beginning, right, mm-hmm. from a scientist's perspective. And the idea was that if there was a big bang in the beginning, the universe should be slowing down in time.
Mm.
That's the logic. And the thinking was, well, if we figure out how rapidly or how the universe is slowing down, we can predict or compute how long ago the universe was formed. But when they observed the stars and galaxies, the galaxies in the far distant horizon of the universe, they discovered that they're actually accelerating, that they're moving faster every time. So the explanation for that is that there is a dark energy that is actually making the universe move faster with time. So there is an understanding that based on formulas and mathematics that about 90% of the universe is not the matter that we know all about. It's something else.
Isn't that fascinating? What do you think it is, Israel?
Well, I think I think the scientists are trying to answer those questions, but there are different theories. Obviously, one of them is that the second is dark matter is something that may be a particle that does not interact normally with anything else that we know about, but except from a gravitational perspective. So those particles have a way to interact with a reality, but that interaction is a very, very subtle one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very strong one. So if you think about that, I mean, if you realize that around us at any given time there is a significant matter, amount of matter that we don't see, we don't sense, we don't touch normally, but somehow interacts with us, and connect that with the many things that have happened from a metaphysical perspective, right? The idea of spirits, the idea of ghosts, the idea of entities in the spiritual realm. You can see that there is room, even in science, for a hypothesis that says, you know, that matter, those entities, those spirits can exist in that matter. Maybe there's an entity that exists in that form and interacts in a very weak way with reality, but it still manifests itself somehow.
Mm-hmm. And so this is where we can look, I guess, at consciousness, and does consciousness exist in that matter?
As well. And it goes back, the question of consciousness goes back more from my perspective to the understanding of quantum physics and the aspects of when reality becomes real, so to speak.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Quantum physics tells us that reality becomes real when it is observed, when there is an observation.
Yes.
That collapses the wave function for a probability in a state, from a possible outcome. And when you start thinking about quantum physics and the fact that we are also made of, obviously, of atoms and electrons and matter, that we are also observers, then we can start thinking in terms of interaction between ourselves and that realm that we don't know about. So that becomes a little bit more of an interaction that can explain what we can do as people, or what we are in terms of people in a different realm. So just for instance, my belief is that the spirit of who we really are exists independently of our bodies, and that we come into this realm as we are born. When we are born, we enter the material realm, and then we interact with reality. Our memories, what we experience, what we live, are actually memories that are written not only in our brain, but in the cosmic background. They are never lost. They never disappear. So even if after our passing, our bodies disintegrate, our memories and what we did in our lives remains in that cosmic canvas and becomes part of the entire universe self-awareness, what we call God.
Mm. Okay, and so in this, I know, so you talk a lot about themes of interconnectedness and choice, and these are predominant themes in the book Honeycomb. So talk to us a little bit about that interconnectedness, and then I want to get to the book and the main character and what he's going through and how that all ties in.
Okay. As I was indicating earlier, what I believe is that the real action, so to speak, is really happening in another, just for lack of a better term, another dimension, in another realm. And what we live in our lives is really a little bit like a play that we all play for purposes of learning and for purposes of experiencing reality. But in the background scene, in the cosmic scene, we are all made of the same matter, and we are interconnected anyway, through the connection that God provides as an entity. So what I try to convey in the novel is that the character choosing one life or another is going to anyway guide him to meet other entities and other people who are really related to himself or herself. That's kind of the idea. We're all the same. A visual image I have, which is not necessarily a nice one, but you know, if you think of an octopus and you look at the tentacles of an octopus, if we're a tentacle, we may think that the other tentacle is a different entity, but we're all part of the octopus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the visual image I have. I mean, in the end, we are all the same, but the way we manifest ourselves in this life is as individuals. And that's good because it helps us kind of grow and acquire experiences, and in the process also making the big octopus grow, right?
Right. That's true. That's so true. Okay, so tell us what happens then in Honeycomb. Give us a synopsis of this novel, of this story.
So in essence, when I wrote the novel, I was aware that, I have all these ideas and everything, but I didn't want to make it just write up on what I believe. I wanted to actually write something that hopefully will be entertaining to read as a work of fiction, primarily. So I wrote a story where the main character finds himself or herself in a special place that I call the Honeycomb, and is advised by a guide that he encounters there that he is about to be reincarnated, and is given the choice because of things that he did in his previous life that make him deserve that right to choose a life from a selection of five lives that he will be able to preview and to evaluate. So the book is really about how the character in the realm is choosing to preview each of those lives. So I have basically five lives previewed by the character, and each of those lives presents basically a story for that life. So the first life is the life of a very rich individual, tycoon, rich person, who is going through a number of business issues and also emotional issues with his girlfriend. He's a very materialistic person.
Mm-hmm.
And in that story, as it develops, you can see how this character, you know, eventually misses the chance to really be happy because of the materialism that he has.
Oh, okay, yeah.
In the second life, is an American Indian character who is in isolation, lives in isolation in New Mexico, and this character is also preparing his departure because his wife has recently passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But he is confronted by the need to do a chore that the gods give to him to be able to do that. And it's more of a slow life, a more quiet life that he has to evaluate as well. Then there is the wife of a woman, and the character is a bit chauvinistic, actually, because he doesn't want to be a woman because he was a woman, and he was not a woman in the previous life. But he gets to know a little bit about that woman, who actually, I think, turns out to be probably the best character in the book.
Oh, is that right?
Because he doesn't want to really explore that possibility, he misses on that.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And another life that he explores is about an individual whose wife passes away in a tornado in New Mexico. And that brings me back a little bit to the idea of the book. All of the characters, all of these lives as they are presented, you can see that they are all connected to each other. So the wife of the character in the fourth life actually meets the American Indian character that I described in the second life.
Oh.
The tycoon guy also meets the American Indian guy, and the American Indian guy is also given the chore to give honey to another character. So they are interrelated with each other.
Oh.
So this other character in the fourth life is also confronting the fact that his daughter is being diagnosed with a terminal disease, and he's doing his best to find a cure for her. And he goes to a lot of extremes to try to save his daughter. Actually, that's another story as well. So the whole story develops around this four character and what he is trying to do to save his daughter.
Fascinating concept.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Israel Del Rio. His new book, Honeycomb, is out on shelves now, and you can find out more about Israel through his website, www.honeycomb.paxorbis.com.
The fifth character, again, is another person who is about to be fired from his job, is trying to find a job, and also ends up in New Mexico. and also meets the American Indian, and essentially, again, goes through an experience as well. So at the end of the novel, the idea is that the character is born, chooses his life, and I'm not going to give away which life he chooses, but that's kind of the idea of the story. It's basically what it's all about.
You know, I was wondering if there was a deeper significance to these characters, like why you chose those particular characters, or if it was just more of the theme of the connectedness with them all.
Yeah, I thought I wanted to give them, I think they all feel like the same character, but at the same time they have different angles to life. So one is very materialistic, the other one is more spiritual, the other one is more so-called practical, more from a technical perspective, the other one is more cynical. So I wanted to give them a little bit of different angles and different perspectives, but they are all basically connected.
Okay. Now, New Mexico pops up a few times. Is there a significance to picking New Mexico?
Well, I've been there, and I believe there are places on Earth that are magical, really magical. And obviously in Mexico there are a couple I know of, but New Mexico is one of those as well. Taos is a place that you just feel the magic there. You feel something there when you are there.
Yeah.
So I felt that was a perfect place to have some of my characters there.
Oh, that's great. Now, I understand that Honeycomb was actually not the first title. This wasn't the working title for this novel. So tell us a little bit what the first title was and how it evolved to Honeycomb.
Yeah, okay. The first title, and that's, remember, I started writing the novel 10 years ago, was Evanescence. That was way before the Evanescence rock group came into the scene.
Yeah.
They're really good, actually. But the idea was the title Evanescence was to depict the state of being the character doing the choosing was in. The choosing was in at the time of being in what I call now the Honeycomb. So it was supposed to convey the ethereal existence of the character prior to choosing a life. And what happened is I was really happy with the title, even if many people told me that was not a very well-known word, somebody joked that it meant Evanescence, and then the group came, the rock group came in, and so it turns out that my daughter's husband, my daughter who writes the Sabrina Teenage Witch, is a great artist. Her husband is also a great artist. He's a book cover designer. And he, in fact, designed the book covers for Michael Crichton's books, and he worked for HarperCollins for many years doing book cover designs. And since he's my son-in-law, he had to do the book cover for me.
Oh, yeah.
He had to, otherwise he wouldn't marry my daughter.
Yeah, right.
So I asked him to please do he offered, actually, to do the book cover for my book. But he suggested the title Honeycomb himself, and sometimes I joke that this is because Evanescence is a difficult cover design to do, but he actually suggested Honeycomb, and I loved it. When I heard the suggestion, I actually went back and wrote some aspects of the book, because I already had the honey, and I had, but instead of calling the area Honeycomb, I had a different name. So I was able to tighten even more the metaphor of the book in terms of having us all being part of the same, being part of the same Honeycomb, the relationship of all of us being part of the same entity.
Yeah.
So it was better than, say, an octopus or something like that.
Yeah.
That was the other example I used.
No, it's a really great cover, and it really conveys the message of your book, and it weaves a spiritual theme with more of a scientific. Like, he really did a great job with it, and I love the title Honeycomb. So
yeah, I'm very happy with it.
Yeah. Now, part of this story also includes a spirit guide, John. So tell us a little bit about his character.
Yeah, John. One of the things that I wanted to also imprint in the novel was that it wasn't gonna be all that serious all the time, because the lives are serious. The depiction of each life is kind of a serious thing, but the actual interactions of the character with John in the Honeycomb space, in the ethereal space, I try to make them a little bit lighter and a little bit not as as serious, because I really believe that there is a little bit of humor and everything as well.
Mm.
So, but the character there is actually supposed to be like an angel, some kind of a guide.
Mm-hmm.
I call him more of a life weaver. He is the person who is actually doing all the work to define the scripts for each life. And he's weaving the lives, and he's not only weaving the lives, he's also going to be responsible to making sure that as each script is lived, actually lived, the choices are present, so that everybody is given a choice. I believe in obviously, in free will. This is not predetermined life
mm-hmm.
that we live, but there are general outlines that we live and general scripts that we have to follow, and we're given choices along the way. So this character is really it's a combination of the guide in he's guiding the character in the honeycomb, and he's also preparing the scripts and doing a little bit of the enabling of the lives that are being chosen. But at the same time, I wanted the tone to be a little bit lighter there,
yeah.
So that because it's not that serious essentially at the end. So.
Right, and it's great that you do include that, not to take everything so seriously and so heavily. I think that when we get into the topic of reincarnation, it can tend to get very serious. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the best thing about reincarnation is that you can always rectify your mistakes. You know, you can always go back and say, okay, I didn't mean that. You know, so okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So that way you can, nothing is really final. You can always kind of learn, and that's what the whole point of reincarnation is that you go back and you learn. And And I think there's a way to remember, if not necessarily the events that we live in the previous lives, I think there is a certain quality in our spirits that remains after we are reincarnated. And you can generally tell when somebody's an old spirit and when it's not an old spirit,
mm-hmm.
when you get to know that person.
Yes, the old soul.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's probably a better term.
Yeah. And you know, what you're talking about is evolving consciousness. And I know that I've heard or read you talk somewhere to the whole concept of an evolving God. And I'd love for you to maybe talk a little further to that concept and what you mean by that.
In essence, it's the idea of why is this all happening in the first place? Why are we going through all this business of reincarnation, and why is all this all about? What's all this about? So if there was a Big Bang and the universe started, some people may say that God created that. And my premise is that it's the other way around, that the universe is creating God. And that what is really happening is that through our lives and through our existences, we are all building God, and God is really the aggregate of all of our experiences and all of our doings and all of our lives. So as we reincarnate and live, we are really kind of making God more and more perfect. Not that God is perfect now, because I believe that if God was perfect, there would be, you remember that old conflict or that paradox of if God is all-powerful, almighty, and omniscient, and benevolent, why do we have a war we live in? Why
mm-hmm.
do we have suffering and so
mm-hmm.
forth?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe God is perfect. I believe God is becoming perfect, and we are contributing to that. And that's what I believe, that the universe is creating God, and not the other way around.
That's so interesting. So do you think then that it, kind of continuing with that it is important for us to explore the idea of past lives and reincarnation and maybe finding out where we've come from and what we've done so we can, right some of those wrongs?
I think so. I mean, I think it's not necessary to explore past lives, because I think we somehow know what's right and what is wrong. I think if you stop to think a bit about how we got some of the moral principles we have,
mm-hmm.
In the past, for example, a couple thousand years ago, there was a certain way of being that was considered acceptable, in terms of balance, and we still have balance today, but at least we know now frown upon that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is not right.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a certain evolution that is happening with what we do as human beings. I think, yes, we need to always try to remember what we may have been doing in a previous life, But I think in deep down we all know what we were. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that our memories are really stored somewhere out there in the cosmic canvas. They are not in our brains. I think short-term memories are being processed in our brains, but the long-term memories are being written in a cosmic canvas. The brain is just the mechanism that is helping us put those memories in the cosmic canvas. It's really a device that we have through evolution to the, I'm talking about physical evolution, to really be able to learn things and be able to use those things as we move into our next life. Mm. So that information is always there. And yes, to the degree that somebody can open his or her spiritual mind to that, that person will be able to remember more and more of the details of previous lives. But at the same time, I think the essence is always there, even though we're not aware of that.
That's so interesting. Well, I'd like to know what your take is on this sort of this surge of books that we're seeing, the information that we're seeing. It's like this demand from society to maybe take things a little farther in their spirituality. And really, I'm seeing a lot on, you know, entertainment, on TV, just here and there, about past lives and regression. I mean, even Oprah, who really is kind of a voice of mass consciousness almost, you know, she's having shows on reincarnation, which is amazing to me. So what do you make of what's happening right now?
All I can think of is that, we are all living in very, very difficult times. We know all about my political statement here, the last 8 years have been miserable thanks to some people there who don't understand anything about how to govern. And people are trying to, you know, come to grips with their problems. But at the same time, that interestingly, when times are good, like in the 90s, you know, when there are jobs and when the economy is good, people don't think about spirituality so much as when the times are bad. So it has a good effect in the sense that, okay, people start thinking a little bit more about spirituality. And you know, just a reminder that when times are good again, because they will be good again in a material sense, people should not forget that it's important to continue thinking about spirituality. And I think in that context, a lot of people are coming to grips with the need to rely on the spiritual aspects and to understand that there are important things out there that go beyond money, the love we have for each other, and obviously the believing God, whether we believe in a certain type of God or a different kind of God, but as long as it is a moral God that we all can agree is a positive one, then that makes people, lean more on that. Mm-hmm. So I think a little bit of that is also a little bit of a collective unconscious. I think there's potentially an awakening coming along in people. I would love to think that. Mm-hmm. In the sense of saying, you know, maybe there's a sense of connectedness and starting to understand that we're really connected, that we all share not only the needs and obligations we have with other people in this world, but that we are also connected spiritually.
It's almost like we had to get to a point of complete disconnectedness to realize our connectedness.
It's a little bit also of a struggle. If I think.